Hi, everybody. My name's Don Norman, and I'm an alcoholic. And, well, first of all, let me thank Kenneth and them for asking me to come back here. I always look forward to coming to Texas. I'll tell you why, because you all are polite. You know, that's the main thing. You all say hello to people, and people in the elevator speak and everything, and I like that a lot. And so that's just something that happens. A lot of times you go places people don't speak to you. You're going to speak somewhere. They stick you in a motel by the airport and don't say nothing to you till it's time to speak. And then they're all happy, you know, and everything. I tell you, where was your ass when I was sitting up there by myself in the room? But anyway. Thank you very much. I'm very distressed recently. I'm sort of not quite right, you know. And I'll tell you why. Then I can get ahead and get into this story. I packed my stuff, and I usually pack ahead of time because I'm old and I forget, you know. And so I get started a week or so ahead of time, but I've been so caught up in family matters that the last minute I just packed and everything. I got the same color pants. I bought 3 pair of pants, no underwear. You know, it's embarrassing, you know, and everything. I was trying to go buy some today. They didn't have none at CVS. I do have a pair on. You know, you go back in your mind, so you know you can wash those things out and hang them up, you know. So I did. I'll tell you the truth. Down at the CVS pharmacy, they didn't have any men's underwear, but they had some ladies' panties. And I looked at them. And I looked at them, and then they had sizes on them. I said, I don't know if I'm a 6 or a 7. So I left them there and came on back, you know. But at any rate, what's going on is my mother's 94 years old, and she's an old lady, and she's not doing well. She's passing on slowly, you know. But so I'm the one in charge of the situation, and so for me to have to go away and do something, I have to depend upon my niece and nephews and them to take care of business. And I was in on vacation. I went to Bangkok, and I'm in Bangkok, and my dumb nephew, he's 21, he texts me. They don't do anything. They text you all the time. So, you know, I know how to text now, but he said, did you hear about Grammy? I thought, oh, God, you know, and everything. So I'm going through it. Well, anyway, I text a friend of mine. He checked. She had just gone to the hospital for a couple hours and came back. I said, don't scare me like that, you know. But at any rate, I sort of I'm on that kind of watch right now. And so I kind of get just, you know, sort of out of it a little bit. But I'm going to tell you this story because that's why you all asked me to come here. And, you know, you get ready when you say yes. You know, it's almost like, well, you get ready. I don't care what's happening. You have to go down there. And I was at the airport on time, early and everything. And then I wound up in Houston. Where are those people? Where's David? He didn't make it tonight either. I'm sitting up at the airport in Houston, and nobody's there to pick me up. See, hi! But I'm cool. I'm old. I know better than get upset. You know, so I just stood there, and they had given me a phone number, and so I called the phone number. This phone doesn't work and everything, so then I called the hotel, and they got together with people and finally gave me the right phone number, and they were stuck in traffic, and they got there, and I'm leaning up there. I was fine, and we got here okay. But they took me to David's house, and David has a miniature museum, art museum. It's like the Metropolitan Museum of Art in a Queens apartment. It was really pretty good. I liked that. And they took me out to dinner to have chicken fried steak because Texas is known for chicken fried steak, and I had to have one. So I had that, and then I'm here, and everything is cool. Now, I was born in L.A. In 1935 on December the 11th, which is actually Bill Wilson's AA birthday. His first birthday was December the 11th, 1934. So I was born on his birthday. So I think that's very significant. You know? Anyway, I was this nice little kid. I grew up. I don't have a story of great pain. Believe me, I don't have one. The pain came later. But when I was a kid, I grew up, and I was gay as a Christmas Eve party. You know, it's nothing to, you know, I remember having a nightshirt. You know those nightshirts that men wore in, like in the Christmas story, Scrooge or something, they had those nightshirts. I loved mine. I'd spin around in it. All I know is my mother took it away one day. I couldn't imagine, why do you want to take my nightshirt? Anyway, I was a happy kid. I had a lot of fun in grammar school, and I was the hall monitor, the flag monitor. I marched around, and I just had a good time in grammar school. I played jacks and tetherball and jump rope. I loved jump rope. And what was that other thing? Hopscotch. I was excellent at hopscotch. Yeah. And I could play baseball and football and all those things, too. I was kind of like a tomboy, really, what it was like. And I went to junior high school, had a good time there. I was not particularly picked on. I was never picked on. The reason I wasn't picked on, really, is I had about 30 cousins in the school with me. And so it's very difficult to, you know, pick on somebody whose cousins will beat you up, and they were lesbians, and they'd really get you, you know? They finally told me, you're going to have to learn how to fight, Donald. You know, that's all it is to it. So, you know, you learn. But then I went to high school. In high school, it was just great. It was just great. I belonged to all the clubs. I was in the you know, Spanish club, the UNESCO club. I was in student body government. I just had a good time in high school. And then I ran track on top of it. I was running. I ran track because my father wanted some boys that liked sports. He was into, you know, boxing and everything, and he bought me and my brother a pair of boxing gloves at one time. Now, my brother was gay, too, so you can imagine we didn't like boxing gloves, you know. Yeah. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to any Golden Globes, you know. Golden Gloves, whatever they were. But I deigned to run track. I said, I'll run track. You know, at least he'll shut up. And I could run. I could run fast, and I could run good. So I ran track. So I was pretty popular in high school and just had a good time. I was one of the kids selected to represent Los Angeles at different places. You know, I went to the United Nations, and I represented at the White House, at, you know, Washington, D.C., and you know, and all these things that people thought, oh, God, Donald is, you know, my family was out there. Look at Donald. He's just wonderful. Plus, I went to church all the time. I went to Salem Baptist Church. I was baptized and went to church. I was an usher and sang in the choir. You know, I was a good boy. I went to church. But Donald is, oh, look at Donald. You have such wonderful children, Lucille. That was my mother's name, Lucille. Now, my brother, I'm telling you, he's gay, too. So we're both standing there talking about that. We're bathing in this, you know, thing that they're saying about us. But I know what I was doing. I was dying to get loose. You know how you, well, you get to a certain age, and I'm going to tell you the truth. You get to about 14 and 15, and you go into heat. You just... You do. People don't talk about it much, you know, but you actually go into heat. Look at kids now. You know, if you know any kids that are teenagers, look at them. They start wearing their blouses down and pushing their titties up, and the boys start pulling their pants down and talking to the girls, you know, everything. So I knew they were doing the thing. You know, they're doing the thing at different, and I want to do the thing, too. And so I figured out the best way to do the thing was to start smoking cigarettes. And I started smoking cigarettes, and then we started drinking a little bit, and right away, I liked it. I really did. It was that, you know, then you drink beer and you chug a leg and you go, and it goes down, boom, and it hits your fingertips, and your fingertips tingle and everything, and your head gets dizzy, and oh, God, it's heaven, you know? And I liked that, and I thought, I'm going to drink forever. I'm going to do this all the time. And so, I didn't get enough. It was obvious I wanted more, you know, because, you know, when you're with a bunch of kids, you have to share with her. She gave you 10 cents, she gave a quarter, so we all chipped in, and you don't get a whole lot. You get a sip, as far as I'm concerned, and then, you know, they drink the rest. So I wanted a whole bottle, so I got a whole bottle. I stole it. I learned to steal, too, about the same time. And I stole this bottle of wine and went to the show. It was a Halloween night, and I went to see Dracula Meets the Wolfman, and Frankenstein was in it too. And I remember killing this bottle of wine and going in this Westlake Theater, and that was it. And my cousin Arlene said, come on, Donald, let's go home. And I thought, go home? When are we going to see this show? And she said, it's over. We already saw it. I thought, I saw it? I didn't remember seeing it at all. And so I thought, well, I'm not telling nobody nothing about this. So I didn't mention it at all to anybody. It happened a lot more. But that just was the start of me getting started drinking. So I started drinking, having a good time, running the streets. And, you know, when you're young and gay, you're cute. And I was so cute. I had tight booty buster pants on. And you know how men pull on you. Yeah, and you, no, leave me alone, you know. You know, I was just glad to be running the streets of America, you know. And I just did that, and we drank all the time. And I went to City College, and I remember I didn't make any classes. I couldn't seem to get to classes. I was always in this joint across the street called George's, and we played bidwist and hollered and smoked cigarettes, and I think we sipped too. And so I didn't make class, but this guy was there, and I love telling it at gay meetings, because this guy was tall and thin, and he was light brown skin, he had green eyes, and he was fine. Oh, God, he was fine. And I watched him all the time. You know how when you have a crush on somebody, and he came up to me one day, you know, we talked, he said, why don't we join the Air Force together as buddies? And you know what I thought he said. I thought he said, let's get married. So there I am, joining the Air Force, swearing to protect the country through thick and thin, and blah, blah, blah. I had a hangover, the sun was burning hot, and I don't know, I never saw him again, but you're stuck once you do something like that, you know, and I wound up in some air base thing, and they taught us how to shoot guns and everything, and I got into a few scrapes, too, because these kids would say, they were from other states, and we were all from California, and they said, and they would make ethnic slurs and say things about California. Well, I told you my cousins taught me how to fight. So I'd jump up and beat them up and everything, so they wouldn't give me a stripe. They said, you can't have one, but we're going to make you a policeman. So they made me a policeman in the Air Force. I was insulted. I couldn't stand it. I thought that was the worst thing they could do to me, to make me a policeman. I really hated it, but I was. And then they shipped me to Alaska. And I'd never seen snow. I'd never seen rain, really, like that, you know. It rains hard up there. Something like it does in Oklahoma, you know, but it was terrible. And then it started to snow. Oh, Lord have mercy. It was really bad. I'm freezing to death and crying, and ice forms on your tears and in your nose, and you're guarding airplanes that are no consequence to anybody. And they actually want you to salute the flag in the morning when it's going up and it's a blizzard, you know, and I'm like this, and the guy, he's from Wyoming, he's all like that. I thought, you're stupid, you know. Anyway, I marched around and just stayed drunk as much as possible. You know, I had a 45 on this hip and a pint of gin on this hip, and that's how I went to duty, you know. And they didn't care that much about how much you drank, but they kicked me out for being a homosexual. That's what it was. And you'd think I felt bad. You know, I really didn't. I was really glad. I was so happy. I said, oh, thank God I'm going home, you know, because I was plotting ways to get out of there, you know, but it's difficult to get out of ice and snow, you know, because there's just no way out. I was going to get in drag and go out of there. That's how my brain was thinking, you know. But anyway, they kicked me out, and I came back home to L.A., I was so happy to see the palm trees and sunshine again. I thought, I'll never leave again. And so I started my adventure of running the streets and partying. And I got a job at the county hospital. And that was my first grown-up job. And I went up there. And in the hospital, all the doctors and nurses are taking pills. They're all jacked up. And they say to you, how do you feel? You know, and you say, well, and then they give you pills, you know. And so I took them, and that's when I learned about, and I'm in the dispatch office, and the dispatch office is where every pill in the world comes through. You know, samples for the doctors, thousands of them. Just doctors get all these things, you know, like Desbutal, Dexamil, Dexedrine, you know, at Milltown, you know, and you're reading this stuff. Do you suffer from, I thought, yeah, I have that. And I had everything, you know. So by this time, I'm drinking and taking pills, and Boogie lived around the corner. And so Boogie brought us some joints one day, and me and Gerald up there, we smoked this weed. You know how the first time you smoke weed, what it's like, you smoke that weed, and my eyelashes got all long and glittery, and you know you get hungry. I remember we made some cute crackers with butter and Tabasco sauce on them, you know. And we thought it tasted good, you know. That was the start of me, taking pills and smoking weed. And you know how you smoke that weed? You think, I'm going to smoke this the rest of my life, you know? I'm happy doing it and running the streets. I'm young. I was 21 and 20, you know, just running the streets, having a good time. I don't suffer that much. You get a hangover, you get back up, you know, a few things happen, but nothing bad, you know? And I'm moving along. I left there and got some other good jobs and went to San Francisco for a minute. There are Lushes up there. They were just such drunk queens, you know. And so we gave them bennies. And straighten up, honey. Take these. You won't fall down so much, you know. So, you know, we're doing this and I'm having a good time. Time goes on. Life goes on. I come back to L.A. and I don't remember exactly what happened, but all I could tell you, it was the 60s. And in the 60s, we were wild. You guys cannot, if you weren't here, it's hard to describe. All I can tell you is we were loaded. We were just loaded the whole time. Drinking jugs of wine and running through the parks and taking LSD and DMT and STP and smoking weed and running from the police and getting stabbed in the lung, you know, and knocked in the head with pistols, and it was just dramatic, you know, and I pursued, I kept going on, you know, and I was just drinking and using, these kids had invented this mess called methadrine. And so, naturally, I got involved in it. By this time, I'm selling Benzedrine and Red Devils and everything, and so we started selling crystal, and I'm shooting crystal, and then they come along with, what was that shit? Oh, angel dust. Yeah, angel dust. It makes you walk backwards, you know. I hated that shit, but you know, I smoked it for 10 years. There I am, you know, this is just going on, and by this time, my mother's looking at me, you know, you don't have black mothers, you all do, but if you ever had a mother look at you and go, And my daddy would say, "What is wrong with you, Donald? You know, can you imagine asking us what's wrong? What's wrong with you?" "I don't know what's wrong. What do you mean what's wrong? What's wrong with you?" You know? I just turned into this wildness, you know, and going and running. You start meeting all these different low-class people till you become one of those low-class people, you know. And then you're running the streets and the police are capturing you at any given moment and handcuffing you and taking you off to jail. And I told you I got knocked in the head with pistols. I remember I got stabbed in the lung accidentally. It wasn't like a thing. Me and my friend had a few words, and I hit him in the head with a hammer, and he stabbed me in the lung, and we made up right away, but, you know. But blood is spurting out, you know, and you know, when you're loaded, you know how you do. I thought, well, I put a Band-Aid over it, and I'll lay this way and take some Red Devils, two and off, and fall out. I remember my mother coming in, I'm in a pool of blood. "What happened?" Take you to the hospital one more time. I'm in the hospital, and they won't give me anything. You know, when you go in, they're really loaded, tore up. They won't give you nothing because they figure you're already medicated, you know. And I thought maybe they could give me a drink. There was no drinks, nothing to take, and I'm supposed to stay there. And I thought, well, I won't. And I got up and AMA'd out of there and wound up, found a bottle. By this time, I'm beginning to have those things they call alcoholic convulsions. Now, the way I would get them was I would decide that I'm going to straighten up. I'm going to straighten up and fly right. I'm going to really do right. And I'm not going to get loaded on nothing. And I would just stop getting loaded and go into a convulsion. So I figured it out that you can't quit drinking because you have convulsions. So I would just keep drinking. So I was doomed to drink. By this time, I'm just drinking rum and Old English 800. And I wouldn't use any more dope. I said, that's the trouble, because that's how you get in trouble, and alcohol is legal. Well, in 1978, I was out on a run like I was. Now, I'll tell you, my mother and father are Christian people. They would let me come home looking like sin. You know how you look like, God damn it, I'll bite you. You know, and you you come in the house and you tell them, I'ma straighten up, I'ma do right, I'ma. And they say, okay, come on in, Donald, and then you steal their TV, you know? So one day, they moved. They sold the property and moved away. And I was gone. I came back and they were gone. And I didn't know where they were and they wouldn't tell me. So this put me at a, you know, at a disadvantage because, you know, I had to start sleeping on people's patios and finding places I could hang out at. And then pretty soon I just moved to downtown LA. And they call it Skid Row. We call it downtown. And I'm in downtown in those flophouse hotels, scuffling along, trying to make it, trying to figure out what to do. I'm not going to use any more dope because that's just dead. And I just drank Thunderbird wine. That's what I did. I'd get up and get me a bottle of wine. What it was is if you get a short dog is a smaller bottle of wine, that cost 79 cents. And if I could get 79 cents and get me a short dog, I could make it. You know how you can, you're shaking like this, I could make it. If I give me a taste, then I got enough energy to pull one more movida, you know, one more move. And that's all I was doing, just making it downtown and trying to stay one step ahead of the police. And they had this bar downtown I used to go to many years ago. It's called the Waldorf Cellar. The Waldorf Cellar was a toilet. You all know about those sawdust, stinky places where the bathroom stinks, the whole place stinks. It's a nasty place. They wouldn't even let me in. They said, nope, don't let him in. That queen brings trouble. The brings trouble. So, you know, I always felt bad. I always felt bad. You know, by people are going to work, doing things, I always felt bad. Birds singing, I felt bad. And I didn't know what to do. I'm stuck in this mess. And so what happened was I'm down there, and the police came one night, and could have been the morning, and there's about eight of them, and they had their guns drawn, and I was on the floor. By the way, I didn't get up much. I stayed on the floor because it's a lot easier because you don't fall, and you don't you don't bump into things. And I used to think people hit me, you know, and they said, no, you fell in that radiator, you know. And so I just crawled on the floor a lot, and the police had their guns at me, and I was thinking, why don't they just shoot me? You know, and they just went, and went away. You feel bad when they just walk away. They don't even arrest you, you know? And so I didn't know what to do, but I went to the picnic. We had a picnic in 1979, and my mother and father and aunts and uncles were there. I thought, I'll go see them, and maybe I can get some money, you know, my little scheme. And I get to the picnic. I don't even remember how I got there, but I got there, and there was a bottle of cold duck sitting on a table back there somewhere. I headed straight for that bottle of cold duck, turned it up, clunk, 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 drank that cold duck, and it was on. I found somebody gave me a bowl joint. I smoked a little bit of that, and I started falling down. And, you know, there were no holes, but I was falling down anyway. And then I caused a little trouble, and my cousin told me to shut up, and I did temporarily. And then we prayed. And once the prayer was done, I got loose. The music started, boom, da, boom, da, boom, da, boom. We Are Family by Sister Sledge, you know. And, you know, I don't know about you. When I get drunk, I can dance. And I want you to see it. And I want you to see how good I can do this dance. And I'm going to do We Are Family. And I thought, well, let me take my clothes off and show you really good how the hoochie-coochie goes. And I'm doing the hoochie-coochie up there, and they're yelling at me to get down, and I'm insulted and hurt. They don't want to see me dance naked, you know. And they took pictures, you know, and I won't look at them. But at any rate, they sent me out of there, and I got back to wherever I was, and I'm in there feeling bad. I was living with this woman that I married because she needed a green card. I didn't even know her. I just married her and she got a little money, $500. And so I was stuck with her, but I was down by her house somehow or another. I figured I could get a little something there. And my mother and father and aunts and uncles were all praying for me. They did a prayer band, you know, in Baptist church they do that. And they prayed for me that day. And the next day, when I was down there, I started feeling so bad. I was walking around, I don't know what to do. And I thought maybe I should ask somebody to help me. And I went to the Yellow Pages and tore out alcohol. And then I looked and tried to figure out, you know, what could I do and how could I do this? And I picked Fifth Street because it was, I could think of five. Five is, you know, okay, between four and six. And so I picked that. And then I had to get a dime. I mooched a dime from somebody, called up there, and the lady said, I asked her, could she help me? She said, well, can you get down here? And I said, yes. And I couldn't get down there. The buses were on strike. It was a hot summer day, and I didn't know how to get down there, and this guy was over there eating a pupusa. And I asked him if he'd give me a ride down there because he had this car. And he said, yeah, he'd give me a ride as soon as he finished his pupusa. And he finished it and took me down to Fifth Street to this place. And it was just a raggedy building with raggedy couches and raggedy people in it. And I went and sat down on the raggedy couch with the rest of them and felt bad. You know how you just feel bad, you know? And the lady came out and she said, you're the one that called, huh? And I said, yeah. And she said, come here. And she took me in somewhere. I can't remember anything except she put me in a chair and asked me some questions. And she said, are you serious about doing something about this drinking problem? And I told her, yes, lady, I'm serious. And then she said, well, do you have a gay problem? I thought, oh, shit. You know, golly, don't ask me that. That's, you know, what else they gonna say? Am I black? Yeah, and I was just through. I told her, yes, lady, I'm gay, but that's not the problem. it's this wine that's killing me. And the lady said she knew it. And I was just amazed that she knew I'm dying, you know? And she said, there's a place in Hollywood that helps people like you. And you tell them you want to go to the Van Ness Recovery House. I told her, okay, lady. She gave me a towel, some Bugley tobacco, army cot bed with that old wolf's thing. The TV was blinking, click, 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 click. It didn't work well. And my nephew came to get me. He said, come on, Uncle Donald. They kind of looked out for me. But I said, no, I'm going to stay here. And I got in line to be dispatched out to this place. And I got in line, and they said, where do you want to go? And this big old black man was sitting there, and I blurted out to him, because I couldn't think of the name of it, I said, the Gay Recovery House. And he went backwards like I had slapped him. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, you know, he looked like shit anyway. But it's funny how guys that are funny looking think they're so good looking that you want them, you know? Can you imagine? If I had that lesbian, God, she'd probably strangle you, you know. But at any rate, they're always that. But the lady swooped around him, and she said, I'll help him. And she had red curly hair, and her name was Sally, and Sally saved my life that day. She said, I'll help him, and she made the phone call, and she lit, and I'm sitting there shaking like a leaf, and she hung up, and she said, they're going to take you. And I said, okay. She said, we'll get you a ride. The ride was like, everything that happened was miraculous. Everything had happened. The guy that was taking me was nervous. He didn't know how to drive. He didn't even know where it was. And we got on the street, and we got to the end of the street. You couldn't go any farther. That was the street. He made the turn, dropped me off, shot me up there, and I'm walking up that walk with some beat-up flip-flops that were breaking, and they finally broke as I got in the house. And the guy, Bill, said, hey. I said, hey. He gave me a pack of Territon cigarettes, first TaylorMade's I'd had in a while, and he asked me a couple of questions. The first question was, what do you know about Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, nothing. You know, and I was 43 years old in L.A., big city, a lot of AA. I didn't know nothing about it. I look back now and think it's probably best I didn't. It's probably good I didn't know, because I knew everything, you know, them smart alecks, you know. But he went away. He came back in the room, and he asked me, what are you willing to do? And I said, anything. Magic answer. That's the answer of life. There's no better answer I could have given. And I meant it. I was so tired. It was like somebody had been beating me with a 2x4 and been throwing gin at me, you know. And I don't know what to do. And he says, well, we read this book around here, and it's in the library right there, and you read it. And it was like a command to my brain, really, at that time. And I got it. He gave me a bed. I was happy to have the bed and went downstairs immediately, got the book, first day, took the book, got on the front porch, and read the book, read Miss Big Book, the first day. And I'm reading her, and it's like a song is being sung to my heart. I'm just reading this thing and saying, you know, there is a solution. Can you imagine when you've been through what I had been through? It's like they're telling me it's a solution to this madness, and I'm reading it like my life depended on it. Then it goes to, you know, more about alcoholism, and it's really confusing to read that on your first day, because it's like, what are they talking about? You know, what are they trying to tell me? It's important, but I couldn't get it. All I knew was important. But then it got to the jaywalker. And I understood the jaywalker. I got him good, you know, dusting himself off and saying, I'm going to straighten up this time, and bam, one more time. And I got that. And so I finished the chapter 5. And when you read chapter 5 in the first day, I try to get people to do it, but nobody will do it. But it was like, man, can you imagine what it's telling you? It's telling you, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I'm thinking, what is the path? What are they talking about? What is the path? And then it goes on to tell you, you are an asshole. You have been an asshole. Yeah, it doesn't bite its tongue. It tells you, you are a fool, you know. And and you want to blame everybody else for it and drop into self-pity and feel sorry for yourself, you really need to straighten up right now, bam, and we're going to tell you how it's done. You're going to get a power greater than yourself, and we're going to talk to you about God. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, thank goodness. Thank God. Tony has a nice little Christian Negro boy, you know. So wasn't nothing wrong with me and God. I had just decided to do what I was going to do, and here I wound up in big trouble. So I'm really reasonable by this time, and I'm reading that book, and I'm thinking, I wonder if I'll be able to do this. I wonder if I'll be able to do it. And I have been doing this for 30 years. I've been right here on duty doing this thing for 30, because my life depends on it. It's not like this is like a joke or something else like this. This is the most serious thing I've ever done in my life. But the funny thing about it, it's a whole lot of fun. I have been dancing and singing in the sunshine of the Spirit like a champ. You know, something in there about this lady that she was all mad at everybody and everything. And she said, but in the end, she gets to do just what she wanted to do all the time. And that's what it is. I've been to Thailand 10 times. La, la, la. I've been to Central America. I've been to Spain. I've been to Africa. I couldn't even leave the liquor store area, you know. Really, you know, I'm serious. I couldn't go nowhere, and I got on methadone maintenance at one time. That's really bad. Don't get on that. It sucks your soul out. It's what it does. But anyway, I got on this thing, and I started going to meetings. People helped me. People were really nice. They were really kind to me in Hollywood. But I was really worried about one thing, and it was about these principles they kept talking about. Because, you know, when you've been really drunk, and they're talking about principles, I was trying to figure out, what are they talking about? You know, you kind of got an idea what they are, but I'm not sure. And it's, if we practice these principles, if you don't have these principles, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, man, you better find out. So I asked Henreen. I said, Henreen, what are they talking about, the principles? One night under the streetlight, she told me, Henreen's gone now, but she said, well, baby, she said, in step one, you get honesty to replace dishonesty. And in step two and three, you get faith and hope to replace that hopelessness and doubt that you had. And she said, in four, five, and six, you get courage to replace this fear. And she said, in seven, you get humility to replace pride. And then eight, nine, and 10, she told me I got responsibility to replace irresponsibility. And in 11, I got patience to replace impatience. And in 12, I got charity, which is giving it all away. And she said, that's what it is, baby. And I said, oh, thank you, Henreen. I said, I wonder if I'll be able to do it. One more time, I've been able to catch these principles. I learned how to do it. I don't gossip about people behind their back ever. I won't talk about you. Please don't come to me and tell me about any of your friends, because I might tell them that you said it. You know what she said about you? We used to do that when I was young. We do that. If you came and said something about someone, we'd tell them when you saw them just to see a fight. You know? But at any rate, I have been on this path. I was able to go back to college and get a degree and work up until the time I retired. I'm retired now. The kids won't let me rest. They keep giving me little part-time jobs so that I can have money. And so I have a little money, and I'm running around, and I get to come down here to Houston, Texas. And in church, we used to have a thing on a certain Sunday of the month, and it was we called it testimony, you know? And in testimony, as kids, everybody had to get up and say a testimony, you know? And what you had to do is say what God has done for you. Well, this is like my testimony. I get to tell you guys, I was down and out, lost old queen, just a sad child, just gone, you know, and everything. And I was on the way to becoming bitter. And you know, it's nothing worse than being a bitter old queen. Just sad. But I'm not one of those, honey. I'm laughing and singing in the sunshine of the Spirit, and he's just pouring his love on me every day. And I'm glad I get to come here and tell you that. Thank you.